is the Grow Your Clinic podcast from Clinic Mastery. We help progressive health professionals to lead inspired teams, transform client experiences, and build clinics for good. Now, it's time to grow your clinic.
Welcome to the Grow Your Clinic podcast. My name is Ben Lynch, and in this episode, we speak with Melissa Yuzva of Solution Psychology in Melbourne, Victoria. Through this episode, we explore Melissa's passion for helping the next generation of therapists and supporting her team through training and development, not only clinically, but personally as well. We explore how that translates into pathways for retaining great team members and also acts as a really great attraction for the next generation of team members in recruitment. Through this podcast, we talk about the challenges and definition of leadership for Melissa, some of the learnings through the COVID period, and the attention to detail that Melissa has when scaling up the systems and support for her team and especially her clients. You're going to find a lot of little pearls in this episode, and I encourage you to identify just one thing that comes up from Melissa's decades of experience that might just make a meaningful difference for you in your journey as you grow your clinic. All right, let's pick up the conversation with Melissa. You've just returned from your team retreat.
We have, yeah.
Where'd you go? Tell me all about it.
We went to Torquay or Janjuk, and it was amazing. It's actually pouring today, so it just was perfect. I couldn't have asked for it to go more smoothly and more according to the brief that I had given myself and Claire, my practice manager. It had just, everything just went off without a hitch. It just was perfect. The theme was reflect and connect, and I think we got a really good balance, both of those things. So it was just amazing. It was our first retreat, and it was amazing.
Amazing. First retreat, go off without a hitch. That's awesome. So reflect and connect, where did that come from for you? What inspired that to be the theme?
You know, everyone's had a really hard couple of years, but particularly in Melbourne and
yes,
a pediatric clinic, it's been yes, really tough. So I just wanted to give the team an opportunity to just really reflect on the awesome job that they've done over the last couple of years and just acknowledge how hard it's been. It's been really hard. And I just wanted them to take some time out. We deliberately chose the end of the year. We really wanted it to be after we've closed the clinic. We closed the clinic early, and we really wanted it to be at this time of the year so that they didn't have to think about going back to work and they could just really just close off and just think about what they've done and what they've achieved and just celebrate that. So that was the reflect part. And then just connect as a team. We've got a lot of new team members, and we haven't had that opportunity because we've been so busy in damage control over the last couple of years. So just that opportunity to connect with each other and get to know some of our newer team members and just get to know each other. We've got some team members who have been with us for a long time but only work one day a week, so they just don't get to see the other team members across the week. So just a chance to connect with each other. I think we really nailed the brief, even though it was one I set for myself. I think we really nailed the brief and had that opportunity to have a chance to do both reflection and connection. And we ended with a really lovely activity where I gave the team the task to put together a 2-minute reflection on their year. It could be anything they wanted. It could be a TikTok. It could be a verbal presentation. Some of them did their own Zoom where they recorded themselves speaking about their year, and it could be work-related or not work-related. So we had just some amazing reflections on their personal journey that they've had this year, and we learned some things about each other that we didn't know. That was a beautiful way to finish the retreat. So
yeah, that is a beautiful touch on the retreat. The retreat sound like an opportunity for people to share and be vulnerable with one another. Yeah. How have you gone about creating that space for people to open up like that, where there is some things that you did specifically during the retreat and no doubt in the lead up? Can you give us an insight into how you've been able to create that?
I think it's being vulnerable myself. So a few years ago, I read Dare to Lead by Brené Brown.
Great book.
And so I think over the last few years, I've been vulnerable in front of my team. So
yes.
I'm not afraid to be vulnerable in front of them. And I think they've seen that. And so I think they're getting braver. I think some of them are seeing other people stand up and share things with the team that are really hard to share. And they see me stand up and share things that are hard to share. They've seen me stand up and cry in front of the team. I cried on the retreat and I said, this is a retreat where we're going to do lots of laughing, but we're also going to cry, and that's okay. Some of my most vulnerable moments are actually talking about how amazing the team are, because that makes me really emotional, because the clinic is my baby. And so talking about how amazing the team are gets me really emotional. And I see people in the team particularly displaying our values. That's my weak spot. So that's where I get really emotional, and that's where I shed tears, because that to me is just amazing. When we've got values up on our wall at the clinic, and I feel we live our values every day, but when I see examples, and I captured some of those examples throughout, or actually Claire captured some of those examples throughout the year when I was on leave, and she'd sent me some photos of some of our team showing those values, and I shared that in our retreat. And that made me emotional. I had shed some tears and explained to the team, that's my weak spot. They're happy tears. When I see the team showing just as much commitment to the company,
yes,
and just as much care for each other and care for our clients and care for each other and living out our values every day, that gets me.
It's quite a moving experience, especially when you put so much effort and care into them and your clients, to be seeing that also happening on their behalf with one another and with you and with the clients. Yeah, what an experience for you. When it comes to the vulnerability side of things, often folks who are listening in will say, like, I get it. I understand I need to be vulnerable with my team, but either I'm scared about how that's going to be received, or I'm not in really sure how to show that vulnerability. Can you maybe share some insights as to how you've gone about doing that with your team? Maybe even reflecting on the last few years, as you mentioned, being particularly hard for Melbourne-based clinics and pediatric-based clinics especially. What were some of the moments of vulnerability that you had to share with your team? Some examples there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I've had some personal journeys that I've had to share with the team. So I think it's being, one, it's having the space to do that. I think it's making sure that your team are all together when you're sharing important personal stuff. So making sure that they're in the one space and you've got them all together, and you tell them you've got to give them warning that you're about to share something. That's pretty personal and pretty vulnerable, and that you've taken the courage to do that, and that you're doing it because you feel comfortable in their presence, so that you're trusting them, and that's why you're sharing this information with them, that they're on the journey with you. I think when it comes to more business focused things, again, it's sharing with them that they are on the journey with you. I've done that in our team and building our team and our team culture. We've done a lot of work on our team over the last 12 months in particular. Our team had seen a lot of turnover during COVID, and that was hard. It was hard to have our team see people come and stay for a short period of time. And we've got some really loyal, amazing team members, but they saw people come and stay for a short period of time. So what we've done in that is bring them along the journey with us in our recruitment. So they are now a part of our recruitment, and we've shared that with them, and we've shared our why with them in why we do that. And that's because we've built a really awesome culture, and we work really hard to build that awesome culture. And not everybody gets to be a part of this awesome culture that we've built. So we want them to help choose who gets to be a part of this culture. So we've come from a place of being vulnerable and having that high turnover, which I think we weren't alone in that during the Melbourne lockdowns and pandemic. It wasn't just us having that high turnover.
Yes.
So it's accepting that this was not a personal attack. We know it wasn't just us, But to come out of that, we had to change the way that we were recruiting and had to understand that we were farming, not hunting. Shane, you know, drummed into me a number of times. So, and we really embraced that and we really changed the way that we were recruiting. And so now a key part of our recruitment is that our team are involved in that process. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if I think that a candidate meets all of our criteria and our practice manager thinks that they do, our team have to agree with that and our team mm-hmm. have to meet them and think that they fit the culture at Solution as well.
And how do you practically go about doing that? Because you've got quite a large team. Is it everyone is involved in that? Is it just some?
So we have two of our team. So after we've gone through the formal recruitment process, we have two of our team members and we rotate who that is.
Yes.
Sometimes it's just down to availability in the practical sense in the way the diaries work, but it's typically rotated. And two team members will take the candidate out for coffee. We're really lucky with where we're located. We're surrounded by cafes, so they'll just pop downstairs to a cafe and have a really relaxed, casual catch-up with the candidate as our last step in our recruitment process. It works both ways. It's great for the candidate to suss out the culture as well and see who they're going to be working with, feel a bit more relaxed to ask some of those informal questions that they might be thinking, and our team are also sussing out whether they can work.
It's a great way to do it, to have them engaged in that process. I know one of the things that you've been passionate about is mentoring team members, especially early stage or early career team members. What is it that lights you up about doing that?
I think it's seeing the growth in a psychologist when they're raw from their university. We all know that when we study for 6 years to become a psychologist and you come out of that, you've got all the theory, all of the knowledge, and very little practical experience. Even though, look, you know, in psychology, we do quite a lot of placements and do have quite a lot of practical experience, but we still know nothing. And so I think seeing that growth from that first day on the job or that first moments to even where they are at their first year, I think that lights me up, and seeing that progress that they make in their first 1, 2, 3 years as a psychologist, that's my passion, seeing that growth and development in all of my team. And I know I do external supervision as well, so it's not just in my team members, it's in all psychologists. And I don't just mentor early career, I mentor a lot of senior psychologists as well. So I just think it's that support that you can give back to the profession that lights me up.
That is wonderful. Similar to the story you were sharing about the values, being able to see them displayed, something that you've shared, and then you're seeing it displayed by someone who gets it, lives it, breathes it. What are some of the principles or approaches that you bring into your mentoring of team members that allow you to create or facilitate that growth for them? How do you go about it? How would you describe your approach to helping people grow and develop?
This is a very good question. I just redid my board-approved supervision course, which we have to redo every 5 years. And we looked at the models of supervision, and I'm thinking, where do I fit in the model of supervision? I think I do a lot of listening and a lot of empathy for the position that my mentees are in, but I also think I do a lot of teaching. I think I do a lot of teaching of bringing my knowledge and my 25 years of having worked with those particular clients. And I think that's generally the types of questions that I get, is this is how I would do it. And the feedback I get from my supervisees is they don't want that reflective, oh, how would you do it? And I think that when they come to me from other supervisors, they find that frustrating. If they knew how to do it, they wouldn't have done it. And so they come to me with wanting answers. So there is that part of it, wanting to check, fact checking, you know, this is what I've done. Am I on the right track? So there's that one part of it. That's the listening part. I think that's the listening part. I just want to run something by you. Do you think I've done this in the right way? Whereas I think the other part is I'm just stuck. What would you have done if this was your client? So I think that's the teaching part. So I think that's probably the majority of my supervision would be, this is what I would have done or what I would do in that situation. So I think that's probably what I do best is that teaching, because I do have that 25 years of experience and have worked with such a breadth of clients that there's probably not, I'm such a problem solver. So even if I haven't seen that presentation, I can problem solve my way out of that situation. So I can always come up with a solution to help them navigate. So teaching and problem solving and listening, I think, would be my approaches to supervision.
So as part of that, you are very passionate about pediatric psychology and training the next generation of therapists that are coming on board. And as you said, across the range of experience, but in particular, the new ones. What is it that you're seeing about the profession that you're most excited about moving forward into the future? Because no doubt you've seen a lot of changes over 25 years. What position is the profession in today as you see it? And what are you optimistic about moving forward?
Look, I think even just the last couple of months, recruitment has changed. We're certainly getting some really exciting applications. We've just hired 5 new psychologists for the start of next year. I'm excited about people wanting to work in pediatrics. Pediatrics is hard. Even I mentioned before, I just redid my board-approved supervision course and I flew to Brisbane to do that. And the belief is that there's a real shortage of pediatric psychologists. Most people don't want to do pediatrics because it's harder than adults, because my theory on why that is because you don't just have one client in pediatrics. You have 3, you have 4, if you want to count both parents, 4, but I say 3 because you've got the child, the parents and the school. So you've got 3 groups of clients, and that's time consuming because your session doesn't end at the 50-minute mark because you've got the communication that needs to happen with those other parties. So the admin involved in pediatrics is just so cumbersome. So a lot of people, if they had a choice, would say, well, I'll just go and work with adults because I can do my 50-minute session, write up my case notes, do a couple of GP letters. And there's not really a whole lot of other admin compared to working in the pediatric space. Then you've got the complication when you bring in separated families, disability, NDIS space. We've just got so many complications that come with working with pediatrics that it takes a real passion to want to work in this space. In the people that come to me, they have that passion. So when they're coming to a pediatric-only clinic, don't have the difficulties of trying to convince these people to take on child clients because we're a pediatric only clinic. So whereas in mixed clinics, you might have that added complication of trying to get your clinicians to see the child clients because they've got adults that they can pick up and easily see. We're a pediatric clinic, so when they come for a job with us, they know that all the clients are pediatric. So they come to me with a passion to work with children. I'm having no, at the moment, we're not having a difficulty filling our positions, whereas 12 months ago, we absolutely would have had a real crisis in recruitment. We're not seeing that now. So I would say that the most exciting thing about the future is that we don't seem to have this crisis in recruitment anymore. So fingers crossed that continues and that we are really building the confidence of our graduates to come and then to stay, building that resilience of our graduates to hang around in the field of pediatrics because the burnout rate is also really high. So if we can get them in and we can keep them in pediatrics by letting them know that there are amazing practices, we really foster that culture and really foster looking after yourself and not burning out. That's the exciting thing, that it's a sustainable profession where you can work in pediatrics for a really long time.
Well, we had on a previous episode, a colleague and friend of yours, Hannah Dunn, and I asked Hannah, what question would you have for our next guest in episode, not knowing who it was? And Hannah asked, I'd love to know from another clinic owner how they go about retaining team members, because that is also quite a challenge. Can you speak to that now that you've referenced it around, yeah, we can bring them in and nurture them, grow them, develop them. Then we want to be able to see a pathway for their continuity here at the clinic. How do you go about it? What are some of the nuances of solution psychology creating pathways for retaining quality team members?
Yeah, great question. For me, it's making sure that my team, two things, know that they're valued and don't burn out. The burnout is particularly important in the psychology space. It's setting KPIs that are going to work for the business because it is a business that needs to be sustainable. So making sure that your team know that it is a business that needs to be sustainable and that without it being sustainable, they don't have a job. We make that really clear from the beginning. So it's making sure that is well known, but that the KPIs are set realistically and achievable for the team. So making sure that the business side of things is set up really well, but to a point where the team members feel that they can achieve and sustain. And I think that we're at a point where we've done that and we've done it really well, to the point where we've just come off 6 months of being at 99% capacity.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And I think we can only do that by our team feeling really valued and not feeling any pressure to go above what their KPIs are. They do that because they have clients that they feel they want to support, not because we say they have to. They've got the KPIs that they need to achieve. Anything above that, they're rewarded for. So I think making your team feel valued and rewarded for the effort that they put in, doing the little things, making your team feel valued for everything that they do. So if you follow me on socials, my team were given so many gifts over lockdown, if anything from posy socks to morning tea sent to their home to fruit boxes. I think it's just those little things of showing your team that you care, showing your team that you appreciate them, feeling valued. This retreat, the constant comments from my team about how much they appreciated it and felt valued. We always do the rosebud thorn activity on our reflections, and overwhelmingly in the column was culture and team and feeling valued and feeling listened to. We do reviews with our team, and in our end of year wrap ups, the overwhelming feedback was feeling listened to by management. So that is a key part of retention. If your team feel valued and listened to, they're less likely to go and look for another job. So having those constant things throughout the year, constant supports and structure, we do 6 month reviews and 12 months reviews. We don't make them performancey. Like, yes, we're reviewing performance. Our end of year reviews, we were reviewing performance, but it didn't feel like that. We took each team member out for lunch and we sat them down and we looked at their, what do you want your calendar to look like next year? Yes, we were reviewing your performance, but it didn't feel like that. That was more of a little checklist thing you did before you came to lunch, but the lunch felt very much about you and what do you want your week to look like next year. So giving them as much autonomy into their diaries. So I think that it's all those little things that you can do to help your team feel valued, supported as a team member. And then there's the burnout. What can you do to make sure that your team are doing enough to support you as a business owner and to support the business financially, but not too much that they're going to burn out?
Yeah, it is quite a big one, especially in the pediatric space, is the burnout. There's quite a lot involved, as you were talking about. How do you go about having the conversations with team? What are some of the things that you use in your approach when their performance is missing the mark? Maybe they aren't reflecting the values like you had set and want to see displayed. How do you go about having those tougher conversations where it's not going to plan?
Yeah. Look, this is not my strength.
It's tricky for a lot of people, myself included.
I think it's that reflection. So getting them to reflect on performance and using data. I'm very much into statistics and data. So we have having the data to back you up we send out weekly data. So our dashboards go out weekly. So it would be looking at bringing them back to the data. Can you talk to me about the data? What's your diary looking like? Looking forward to their diary and problem solving with them rather than reflecting back on what has happened, looking forward and saying, okay, so we look at 4 week forward data. So
yes.
Talk to me about the next 4 weeks. I can see that your diary is at 60%. What can we do to help you get that diary up to 80, 90% in the next 4 weeks and make it a conversation about us rather than about them? How can we help you? What do you need from the CRT team? What do you need from the practice manager? How can we help you to get that diary full? So just focus on solving the problem. So I'm very much into solutions rather than problems. So what can we do to fix it? Is there anything going on that I should know about and moving forward?
The CRT you mentioned, client relationship team, just for those listening in to that, is a really nice reframe and distinction on admin, reception, support team members. What I love about that, Melissa, is like the open-ended questions as well, like talk me through it. What are you saying? Versus often is the case, we feel the pressure maybe to really point out, here's what's going wrong. And almost we're telling people off. Often when speaking with clinic owners, they feel like they have to come to that conversation with that type of approach versus like you're saying, it's a collaboration. We're going to find the solution together. And using those open-ended questions to get them to reflect on it is a really great method to be able to use. I'm interested, you said there that wasn't quite your strength or the thing that you liked. What is your genius as a business owner? Genius being like your circle of competence in your wheelhouse, something that you feel particularly strong at and good with when it comes to business, because we juggle so many different hats, right? Or we spin so many different plates. What is it that you feel really in flow doing on a daily or weekly basis? You feel this is where you add the most value?
Definitely in supporting the team. 100%. That's where I excel. I'm always there for the team. If I'm not in the clinic, which I'm not in the clinic a lot, there's not necessarily enough room for me in the clinic. We're bursting at the seams. I am at home, working at home, and we use Teams and they can message me on Teams and I am always available to the team. So some would say too much. But that is my strength, that they can come to me and I am always available to support the team. Probably something that I need to outsource a little bit, but I'm always available to the team. I do love doing the finance stuff as well. I love looking at the numbers and looking at that end of stuff as well, but where my strength is in supporting the team.
Has that always been the case with the numbers? Like, what's your journey been with numbers? Because it is quite common for health professionals to be confronted when all of a sudden the business side, like, give us an insight into your journey with numbers now to the point where you're like, you know what, I love the numbers.
I really enjoy now the director stuff. Like, I wish I could spend more time on the director stuff and reading business books. And I wish I had more time to just do that stuff. But I love supporting the team. I wish I had more support to do that so that I could step away from that more and do more director stuff. I've got a director role description and I reckon I do 2% of the things on the director role description because I'm so busy still supporting the team. One example, psychologists have to do endorsement supervision and they have to do that weekly. And so for all of our team that are doing endorsement supervision, that falls on me to do that because we don't have another team member who can do that. I would love to have someone else who can take some of that on so that I can step away a little bit more and do more of the director duties. So that's what's next, I think. I love looking at our rolling break even and looking at the future direction of the business.
Great opportunities to come then with that. You reflected on the hardship, adversity of COVID, especially in Melbourne, and the fact that being vulnerable with your team has been a really great thing for you to do. How would you reflect on your evolution as a leader, because you make this transformation or transition from therapist, build up a caseload as a business owner, then you start to bring on more team members. We go through quite a transition and progression as a leader. As you reflect on the last few years, are there any other things that stand out that you feel have been important milestones or skills or developments that you've had as a leader? Obviously, being vulnerable was a key one. What else comes to mind for you?
I think for me, it started when I got sick. So 2019, when I had cancer and cardiomyopathy diagnosed both within a short space of time, that was my wake-up call to step away from client work. Well, forced by my medical team telling me that I really had to step away from seeing so many clients. And when I was recovering from my surgery, I read Radical Candor and Dare to Lead, Kim Scott and Brené Brown, and they were my light bulb books because they resonated with me. I wouldn't say I learned a huge amount of new information. They just resonated with me. They resonated with my values. And they just said to me, this is how I lead. Naturally, this is how I lead. And I think that started my journey of leadership as a business owner. I was always, I think, leading as a mentor and as a supervisor. But that started my journey of leading as a business owner and really shifted my thinking in terms of I now need to lead in a different way and separate that supervisor role from that business owner role. And so that's when I came to Clinic Mastery. And that's when my journey, I think, really started to shift. And of course, then we went into lockdown. So we just then became into survival mode. So then it wasn't about progressing the business. It was then about how do we survive this storm that is going to hang around. And I think this is another strength of mine as a business owner, is that I don't sit and watch things unfold. I get in and I get it done, and I get it done quickly. And I remember March 2020, I had all my policies already done. I had every COVID policy written. Everything was ready to go. And I think it was August and people were still asking questions about different policies. I had this done months ago.
Yes.
And it was hard. It was really hard. I worked really hard. I mean, you know, the hours I was working for a very long time. And so that's just what I did, because I see the problem and I get in and I get it done straight away, whatever it takes, at whatever cost. And so then it was just survival mode. My policies were written and everything was implemented, but then it was just survival mode to get through this 100% online pediatric business, working with 3, 4, 5-year-olds via telehealth. But my team, they smashed it. We were running groups online. I reckon it was 12 months later, people were saying, oh, is anyone running groups online? We've been doing that for 12 months and in really innovative ways. One of my team members was making up packs and sending it to families so the kids would get excited because they'd get this package arrive at the door, and in that pack they'd have all of the materials that they would need for session one and session two. That would be ingredients that they needed to make slime and everything that they needed, a little pack for the parent to go off and make a cup of tea and light a candle while the child was in the session with us. We were nailing it while everyone else was still running around going, oh, COVID, what are we going to do? So it was a storm, but we were absolutely sailing that storm like superstars that my team are. And that's why they're so amazing at what they do, because they see a problem and they just go, how are we going to do this? Not, we can't do this. How are we going to do this? And we got through that. So I think that those two books, and then that decision to join CM, and then just to stick that out and just to go, right, this is a journey. It's a journey, and it's not a 6-month commitment. It's not a 12-month commitment. It's something that I can see progression with. And I think once we got through, it wasn't until we got through COVID, it wasn't until this year, really, I think, it wasn't until this year and things started to really settle Shane and I could really start actually doing some proper work together and start to, yeah, really say, okay, what's next now and what's the next chapter look like?
What's it been like working with a coach and a mentor in that capacity? Like you said, you kind of made that shift of now I'm leading as a business owner. What's it been like for you to have someone there that can support you, like who supports the leaders? Can you give some insight into your journey having that support, especially over the last couple of years?
Look, it's been great. I think a couple of things that have really stood out for me is understanding the business side of the business. I've really enjoyed understanding dashboards and RBEs and all of the financial end of things, how to set up my zero properly. I really enjoy that much more than I thought that I would. So I've really enjoyed understanding that end, which I had no clue about how to do that before. So really that journey I really appreciated and really enjoy. And I think the second part that I really value is my personal journey in understanding my personal values and the impact that other things have on my personal values and how much impacts my personal values. And oh, that's why I'm frustrated with that, because it's a clash with my personal values. So I think that's really important. And I think something else that I really value that Shane does, has probably worked really hard on with me, is getting me to acknowledge my own role in everything that solution psychology is. So that's not a strength of mine. I tend to outsource acknowledging everybody else. And I think that Shane has helped me acknowledge my own role in what we've been able to accomplish and achieve over the last few years. So I appreciate being led on that journey of growth myself and being able to say, I work really hard, I work really long hours, and it's okay to say, I did that.
Yeah, nice. I agree. It's something that I've also learned from Shane Davis as well. He asked the question, what do you want to acknowledge yourself for this week, this month, this year? It's a wonderful question for reflection, because like you said, we rarely pat ourselves on the back. So it's a good piece of accountability. Something to pick up there around the finances side of things. How did you go about perhaps reconciling the meaning that you associate to serving clients and the care in healthcare and making money and being profitable as a business owner? So often people can say they're at odds. How can you really care about people and also want to make money? How have you gone about reconciling that element of being a health professional in business?
I think COVID did that, honestly, for me. Yeah. I think COVID did that for me. I think this is my 25 years of being registered and I'm tired. And I think I came pretty close this year to making a decision of, I actually gave myself a deadline of August. It's either close or expand. I actually told my cardiologist that was my deadline, because he said something's got to change. You've got to make a decision. You can't keep working the hours that you're working. Yeah. This was in May. And he said that you've got to make some changes. And I said, I've given myself till August. We were going on an overseas holiday in August. And I said, by August, I will have decided to either close or expand. He said, they're two pretty extreme.
And that's closed not necessarily because of how the business is performing. It's just the toll that it was having on you.
Yeah. There were a lot of things happening in the business at the time. It was just me being just tired, and just how much more have I personally got to give to this, and how much longer have I got in me in this industry?
Yeah. So like there's some reflective questions, no doubt you entertained, but how did you go about making the decision? Like what was part of your process?
I know that when I do eventually stop working, I want to go out on a high. I don't want to ever go out feeling like something wasn't finished. I don't want to ever go out thinking, I wish I had have done this, or I wish I had have done that. And if I had finished in August, it wouldn't have felt complete. So I knew in the bottom of my heart, I knew that it wasn't going to be in August. And if it had have been forced to have finished up in August, it wouldn't have felt complete. It just wouldn't have felt right. So we did turn things around. Recruitment was one of those things. Culture was a huge change for us. We made a couple of really good appointments. Things have changed a lot since May for us. And yeah, I think the answer's obvious, but expansion, it was.
Keep on going along. That's what you've created, and being able to see your journey in various time points and to various degrees, it's quite incredible to see the work that you are doing and that the team are doing for your local community as well. It's quite amazing. So big kudos to you. I'm interested to know from your perspective, if you would ask a clinic owner a question to figure out how they tackle any particular part of being a health professional in business, what question would you ask them?
I would ask them how they switch off.
Nice tie-in.
I think I've had a goal for the last 3 or 4 years to work less, to take Mondays and Fridays off, or block them out in my calendar to certainly not be available to team. I had a coaching session this morning. It's another goal for next year. I feel finally actually able to do that. So I think next year's the year, but that's what I would love to know, is how they switch off from the business.
Yeah, great question indeed. It's always great to hear from other people and learn from them and see how they approach things. So I've really valued your insights today about your journey and how you've gone about things, a little peek under the hood as to how you've navigated some of the challenges and hardships, especially over the last couple of years, but as part of a massive career over 25 years. It's awesome for mine to see people like you who are passionate about the profession and about the ripples through helping the clients that you help as well. Because I think small business, private practice, so much we are the hubs of where the next generation come from, and the skill set, the philosophies and approaches are passed on and through small businesses, private practices. So it's awesome to hear your passion come through. Thank you very much for joining us on this episode.
Thanks, Ben.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to the Grow Your Clinic podcast. To find out more about past episodes or how we can help you, head to www.clinicmastery.com/podcast. And please remember to rate and review us on your podcast player of choice. See you on the next episode.